fan, you drooled when the schedule came out in the spring. San Francisco at Kansas City, week two. Joe Montana against Steve Young. Joe Montana, the legend, against the team that he made legendary. Time to add yet another chapter to an overflowing book. It's longer than a Russian novel. Joe Cool, the Chiefs were in the cool zone.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to I Left My Wallet. I'm Antonio the Promise Thomas, and I want to thank you for tuning in to this very special free episode of Left My Wallet, where I'm going to be talking to New Japan's own Rocky Romero. And I wanted to take this opportunity to share this great talk that I had with Rocky promoting the New Japan US tour that is coming up, and to talk some UFC, to talk his music, his album, Sneaky Style, and just give you, the listener and the reader here at the Wrestling Observer, maybe a chance to check out my show and see how it's different, see how it's not your typical wrestling talk show or podcast. The whole premise is I'm talking to other workers about sports or other random subjects, such as action figures, such as when I had Mike Quackenbush on talking about G.I. Joe and cartoons from the 80s, from our childhood. I had Bill Apter on, and we were talking about his stories, his time with Larry Holmes and Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. So it's a diverse show, but it's different. It's about wrestling, but it's also about sports. It's also about different topics that you normally don't hear some of your favorite workers or wrestling personalities talking about. And Rocky and I, of course, we talk a little bit of basketball. We get into some martial arts training in the dojo in Japan, him for New Japan, me for All Japan, how it translates into the ring. This past Saturday's UFC card, Cowboy versus Connor, so much more. And I wanted to bring it to you for free. And I believe I've only met Rocky briefly a few times, but this, my 20th year in professional wrestling, and Rocky is just about at the same amount of time. It's crazy that we never had a chance to really sit down and talk and at least shoot the breeze for a couple minutes. This was the first time. I really enjoyed it. He's such an awesome guy. We have many mutual friends, and I wanted to bring this to you free of charge. And if you like this and any of the other free shows that you might see here at WrestlingObserver.com, go join. Come and be a part of this fantastic website, which has thousands upon thousands of hours of audio content, of old archives that you can read, that you can listen to. I'll tell you what, Brian has said it before, and I'm going to reiterate it. You will never have enough time in the day to keep up with all the audio that we have here on the site. If you go back all the way back to all the audio ever on this site, there's not enough time in the day to listen to it 24/7, 365. Not that you could do that anyway, but you know, there's endless content here on the site. I'm happy to be a part of this great family here at Wrestling Observer and to bring you this show. So without further ado, I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to shut up. You are here to listen to Rocky Romero. If you like it, go join the site here at WrestlingObserver.com. And here is my chat with Rocky Romero. Enjoy.
How would you know? You never know. How would you know? I'm the king of Roppongi, sneaky style. I'm the king of Roppongi, sneaky style. I'm the king of Roppongi, sneaky style. I'm the king of Roppongi, sneaky style.
Are you a football fan? You a big sports fan?
No. No. Not at all.
Okay.
No.
So you don't. No.
I watched the UFC on Saturday. That was like that's probably as big as it's going to get for me. But yeah, I don't watch any football. And it, like, I like to go to basketball games. That's about it. And I like the Clippers a bit.
Okay. Cause I'm here in Massachusetts. And right now I got on the Celtics versus the Lakers, but you're a Clippers. If anyone, you're a Clippers guy. The Clippers are cool now, but like when we were growing up, they were like one of the most
worst
embarrassing franchises anywhere. Right. What was it about the Clippers that,
you know what? I think it just pissed me off that everybody liked the Lakers.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And like, especially, you know, and I liked like the Lakers as a kid, like when Magic was on it and Kareem was there, you know, like as a really young kid.
Yeah.
I thought they were cool, you know?
Yeah.
But then like when Kobe and Shaq started playing, I could never get into Kobe.
Yeah.
So everybody was about the Lakers, and I think I was just trying to be antisocial. So somehow I went to, it was like, oh, let me pick this really shitty team. And my mom used to get like tickets for free, because they couldn't give, you know, like that's the only way that I think they would get people in the building, is if they gave tickets away.
Yeah.
So she would get tickets all the time, like through her work. So we would go to Clippers games, and I would go and see, like, not to really see the Clippers, but to see like who, you know, who they were going against, you know, like,
yeah, yeah. See Billy Crystal sitting there. Yeah,
exactly.
Danny Manning play. And, right. God, I can't even think of who else was there, but, yeah, Larry Brown coached them for like the early 90s, and they were pretty decent. They were like 6th, 7th seed when the playoffs came around, but, they were in vogue a little time there when Magic retired and the Lakers sucked before Shaq.
Right.
But, small.
Have
window.
We started? Have we started? Are we?
Yeah.
On?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, no. It's just,
all right.
Yeah.
It truly is shooting the shit. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I got into them. I think just to be anti-Lakers, you know, like, but then, you know, when they obviously like, when they got like Blake, they became awesome, you know, and then they started doing really well. And so, yeah, I think they're pretty cool. And I went to a game like about a month ago. Me and my mom went, which was really cool. Yeah.
Who'd they play?
They played, Atlanta.
Okay. Oh yeah. My dad lives in Atlanta. So they got Trae Young. So,
yeah, it was a good game. Clippers beat the hell out of them, though. They won like by like 20 or 30 points, something like that.
Was Kawhi and Paul George both playing? Because it's like,
no,
it was
still busted up or whatever.
Okay,
because
Kawhi's like resting, and then, you know, or Paul George, he's hurt now, but
right,
yeah, getting those two guys on the court together has been an issue so far. You mentioned the UFC, and I wanted to bring that up because I saw it on your Twitter, you know, where you put up a poll, Connor or Cerrone. Now you did get to see the show, because you had Black Label Pro on Saturday, but those shows usually run early, so you had a chance to watch the pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, yeah, so, like, it was, like, an hour from my hotel room, the drive, so, like, I made it, and I think when I put it on, it was whatever the fight was right before the Holly Holm fight.
Oh, Alexei Oleinik and Maurice Green. Okay, yep.
Yeah, so that was just finishing, and then they started, like, you know, doing like the video packages for the Holly Holm fight. So mm-hmm. I got to the hotel, ordered some Uber Eats, and then like took a shower really quick, and then like the Holly Holm fight was on.
Nice.
And then so I watched like the last two fights, and then I'll probably watch the earlier fights later, just because I ordered it, you know. So I'm sure. I better watch it. You know, it's like an $80 pay per view, which is insane.
I did too. Me and my me and my girlfriend were gonna meet some friends out at a Buffalo Wild Wings. We had a snowstorm here, so I turned around, and I think it was $65 on mine. And I'm horrible at streaming stuff because now you got to go through ESPN Plus. So it's remembering my Amazon password and all this stuff.
Just scrambling at the last second, like, I can get this thing up.
Yeah, so I got to, it was the fight before Olenek. So I saw three, you know, we saw what we needed to see pretty much. Now, big UFC fan, big MMA fan, I'm guessing, a lot of tie-ins through wrestling and whatnot. But what, are you a UFC OG that goes back, you know, getting the tapes at the video stores back in the 90s, or are you more along the lines of The Ultimate Fighter 2005, the big boom then? How far back do you go?
Far back to like remembering, you know, in elementary, like kids talking about it, and then, but like my parents, you know, weren't into it, so like, you know, I didn't really remember watching it on TV, but I do remember the tapes being available, and then being like a little older, and then getting those, you know, those tapes and being like, what the fuck is going on? This is crazy. These martial artists, you know, or just street fucking fighters, you know, fighting each other. I mean, it was pretty wild. And then, definitely being intrigued, you know, at a young age, watching those tapes. And then later, of course, with the, you know, in its resurgence. And even before the resurgence, like when, like before the Ultimate Fighter, like when it was kind of just like weird, and they would just have like, they just have like a couple of year, and like Frank Shamrock was still fighting. And that it, when it kind of became a sport still, you know, but it wasn't quite, you know.
Early Tito Ortiz kind of. Was that your guy being out from the West Coast?
Of course. Me and Samoa Joe, we would like, I'd go over to Joe's house. Joe would get like all the pay-per-views, or like even like the early prides. Like he introduced me to like early pride, and we'd like play video games, and we'd watch, you know, we'd stay up till, you know, till two or three, like how people are watching New Japan now.
Yeah.
Like we're staying up to like two or three in the morning and like ordering like wings and pizza and like watching Pride, you know, like, but at that time it was already like, you know, Sakuraba versus Vanderlei, and, this, you know, like 2001, 2002 ish, you know, 2003.
Like Pride was, it had a little bit of everything. Like no drug testing Pride. It was like awesome.
Of course not.
You'd have like go back and
soccer kicks to the head. I mean, like just straight up violence, you know?
Yeah. Who was the guy from the Oddities that Giant Silva fought? Was it Heath Herring? I was with All Japan. I lived and trained at the dojo when I would go over there. I was with All Japan from 2008 to 2010.
Okay.
And I remember going to Saitama because Scott D'Amore would come over to All Japan sometimes. And he was friends with Frank Trigg, who was, I guess, through TNA, and he was fighting at the time. And it was a Pride. Was it Pride? I can't remember exactly what it was,
but
it was
K1. Right?
It was K
one of the K1.
Yeah, like, I think
mixed shows or whatever it was.
I've been to a lot of UFC shows here, but it was so different and so unique. Like it was fascinating seeing the difference between over the kind of like, you know, pro wrestling is. between here and there. Did, you know, being in Japan so much, did you ever get to go to any Pride or K-1 shows in all your time out there?
I never did, just because I think, like, we, you know, for the most part, we were mostly working, you know, like being over there. So, I mean, there's probably times where I was off, but, like, I don't know, I just always would forget, or, like, it would never be like, oh, I got to go, you know, be a part of that. And I should have, I wish I would have now, you know, looking back now. But, you know, I feel like I hardly do anything, like, cool when I'm there like that. Like, you know, like, I hardly ever go to concerts. I hardly ever, and I get invited, but, you know, it's, the thing is, too, is, like, when I'm off and I'm over there, I'm just, like, I couldn't be bothered to go. And, like, be around a bunch of people, you know what I'm saying? Like, like, and then do the whole thing. But even though I know that if somebody was like, oh, got, went and got tickets and did, and set it all up, I would be more than happy to go, because it would be a lot of fun, you know? But just, like, I think just getting myself to do it, I'd just rather, you know, sit in the hotel room and, like, play video games and just, like, or sleep, you know, or something, you know? So,
Who were you going for, Connor or Cerrone?
That's, you know, I wasn't really going for anybody, as I was hoping to see, like, a, like, you know, just kind of like a straight up cowboy fight, you know, like, where, you know, they were maybe dogging it out a little bit, at least for, like, two or three rounds.
That's, you know, what most people, that's what most people thought.
I was just looking for, like, a, that's all I really wanted. I was like, oh, this seems like, because on paper it seems like a pretty interesting fight, right? Like,
right. And I think, you know, the other name that was brought up for McGregor was Justin Gaethje, and I think that would have definitely been a, I mean, who knows with those shoulder strikes, which are, you know, going to be all the rage now.
I know. And it's such an old school technique, right?
Like,
nobody did it with such force, you know, like,
yeah.
That's like a shoulder. Those shoulder strikes go back since, like, those Tito days, you know, like, people hitting each other with their shoulders.
Oh, so. Yeah. The Mark Coleman headbutting days as well, you know, you know, the shoulder strike, not a lot of foot stomps. You can still foot stomp. You don't see it too often, obviously only against the cage, but,
Scott, are you going to need, like, some crazy striker who's just, like, a freak who, like, foot stomps somebody and then, like, breaks that other person's foot?
Yeah.
And then that's the new rage. You know, like, that's what it always ends up being.
Yeah, and, I mean, crazy striker coming up, we got John Jones, Dominic Reyes, and there's a lot of interesting fights coming up. It seems like there hasn't, since you know, the ESPN kind of took over, aside from the MSG show, which had the BMF title with Masvidal and Diaz. You know, you had Cormier and Stipe Miocic. Hasn't been many, like, must-see UFC pay-per-views. This was the first in a while, and hopefully coming up, you know, you got Ferguson and Khabib, which
that's going to be pretty crazy.
Yes, if they can get past, if nobody gets injured and they can make weight, because this is like the fifth time that they have, you know, been scheduled to fight. Reyes and John Jones, you know, we're going to have, McGregor took not even any punishment, so he's ready to go against whoever. What excites you most?
I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see, though. I mean, just since we're talking about Connor, I'm kind of curious to see what else he can do at 175, right? Like,
yeah, 170. He said
170.
He first guy to win titles in two different weight classes, first guy to have knockouts in three different weight classes. So, you know, he was calling out Paul Felder at the table, which would be an awesome battle between two. We talk about you know, unorthodox strikers. Man, I want to see Masvidal. I want to see Masvidal too.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting.
They interviewed him before the main event. He was sitting there. They kept showing him. Honestly, this seems like a new McGregor. you know, he's talking with Cerrone's grandmother and hugging him right after. Not a lot of trash talk.
No.
But that was
I think he was just so excited about what he just did. I mean, that was a crazy accomplishment, yeah. And the amount of time that he did it. I mean, it was insane. He's a crazy athlete. He's a freak.
Yeah. Yeah. And the left hand is nuclear. Not often where you have, I mean, the way he can switch stances, and he is a lefty, so the left hand is going to be his power hand, but it, you know,
but his mental like state, you know, like when he's like focused.
Yes.
He's like that. I think that's his greatest weapon. Like when he's in it, when he's completely in it, he's, I don't think anybody could, you know, like it's, well, you know, obviously he could be stopped, but like, you know, that's when he's like the most dangerous. Cause you see him, that's when he finishes people in like these early stoppages, you know, like,
yeah,
when he's like in it. You know?
Every time the pressure's on and someone's expecting a big performance from him, he delivers. Eddie Alvarez, go back to when he beat Chad Mendez. When he faced Khabib, he was a mess. Just, you know, he said he didn't train right. He was training, but it wasn't fight camp training.
And he's drank a lot, right?
Yeah, and he still went three rounds with, right, you know, the best in the world today. Yeah. You know, there's a guy that's never, you know. So yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be interesting. What I want to know though is, most of my adult life I've been doing martial arts in some form. You know, I didn't wrestled sparingly in high school. But you know, really didn't get into it, you know, the way I am now until, you know, years after I got into pro wrestling. Both of us having trained in, you know, Japan at the dojos. How much, what is your background as far as martial arts, whether it be, you know, doing karate as a kid or wrestling in high school? And how important, just to the listeners, how important that is to transfer over into the ring to your in-ring style?
So like I did karate as a kid. I played baseball. That's kind of pretty much it. And then, you know, I was just always wrestling, you know, as a kid, like with my cousins and by myself and jumping off stuff in my mom's house and stuff, you know? So, I didn't really know I knew I wanted to be a professional wrestler at a really young age. I just didn't know how it worked, you know, and this is kind of, you know, just the beginning of the internet, you know, really like AOL still, you know? And so I didn't really understand how it worked, you know, completely. So I, in high school, I was just like, oh, if I become an amateur wrestler, there's gotta be some connection. Right.
Right.
So I you know, my freshman year, I signed up for wrestling and I was on the squad and, I did like the whole, I think I did, yeah, I did the whole, that whole season. And then I think I placed like second in like JV or something, like whatever tournament or whatever at the league or whatever it was. And then I was still kind of searching the internet, trying to figure out, okay, like how do you become a wrestler? Then the movie came out, Beyond the Mat. And then that kind of was like, oh, there's like schools you go to. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the APW school. Cause that's the only school that I know of in California. And I'll do that when I graduate or whatever. And then I think during the summer, that summer or so, like when I was a sophomore, becoming a sophomore or something, I found this school called School of Hard Knocks, which is like EWS school, Jesse Hernandez and Bill Anderson.
Yeah.
And then that was like local, you know, San Bernardino, as close as you're going to get to, you know, to Los Angeles. So then I was like, oh, I can go there. So I just kind of like called on a whim. And I was still in high school wrestling at this time. And then I called there and they were like, oh yeah, you can come and train. We got a guy that's around your age. So why don't you just come in? You can train with him. And I was like, oh, cool. Cause you know, I was like 15 or so.
Yeah.
So then, once I found out that I could train, I just basically stopped showing up to amateur wrestling.
That was
it was over with. Even though I was pretty good, and I probably, you know, if I would have, been forced into, going to university or had like the want to go to university or college, then if I would have stayed in, I probably would have done pretty well enough to get something, somewhere.
That's hard though, man, to cut weight and
bump. It was tough. And I got used to it at the end of the year and I figured out how to make weight and but it was tough. Like the first time I started trying to make weight, I swear to God, I turned green and got so sick.
Yeah.
And then everybody was like, you shouldn't cut weight anymore. But then I figured it out, there's a science to it, And you figure out what your body can actually do and what you can't do. It's a good mental thing though.
Absolutely.
To try to make weight. But, So then I thought I was kind of done with martial arts or anything else because, once I started training, professional wrestling, that was kind of it. But, this is all during that time of Tito, the early Tito days and stuff like we were talking about. So, I was still watching UFC and watching those things. And then just I started getting heavily into Japanese wrestling. And then I started to realize how close Japanese wrestling was, professional wrestling, and MMA. I mean, MMA derives from it. So I started to kind of really get into it, me and Ricky Reyes. And then, like I said, Samoa Joe. So then I started to kind of, I don't think I was fully training it, but it was I would if I would see some kind of cool technique, then I would do it. I'd be doing it in professional wrestling already, Or if I was watching rings or Pancrase or something, then Volkan. I would copy it and do it in wrestling matches,
Yeah.
And then once I joined the New Japan Dojo, then I was just, we were all, we were hardly doing professional wrestling. The first year, it was just all kickboxing and we're doing jujitsu and training with, we're training with Inoki. So he was teaching us catch stuff.
Yeah.
It was all heavy every day. Basically we were in a year long training camp. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
I
remember at the All Japan Dojo, Suwama would come in and we would do amateur wrestling stuff, just basic pummeling and take, single legs, double legs, stuff like that. But I remember before the shows, this was when Minoru Suzuki was there. He was always rolling around. He would roll around with Yamato before and some of the young boys. And
I don't know. He still does. He still tortures
people.
Does
he still? Yeah. Me, I wanted to hop up in there and but me and Aaron Aguilera would be, he'd be like, nah, dog, I'm not.
When I was younger and Suzuki had just came back to wrestling, I want to say he did a Super Junior tour. I don't think he was in the Super Junior. I can't remember exactly, but I know he was around this Super Junior in I want to say 2003, 2004. And I remember because I'm pretty sure I had a singles match with him somehow.
Wow.
At a show. And then I remember around that time, this was kind of pre-factions. So so before the show, it was a bit more open. And I think I was rolling with him before the show too, or something that. And I was just this guy is a fucking killer, this is no joke. He's a killer. And then, I think he was nicer back then too. Want to say, that was a good experience. I like it. Just crazy experience to roll with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever work with, Funaki, Masakatsu Funaki? Cause he was there. I got a chance, once I got a chance to team with him and work against them in tag matches in All Japan. And man, he he lays his kicks in, but as he, obviously he should, but safely and just, that's a guy that was holy shit, what a worker. And the guy, him and Suzuki were responsible, you know, go back to the roots of Pancrase and
right.
whatnot. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, that's to me, just because I had the opportunity to work with them, I just think that's a, you hear about guys that get slept on or maybe guys that people don't think about with some of the best workers. And it's like, he's so calm and quiet, you know, just a very polite guy. You wouldn't think that, you know, he could literally kill you with, you right. know, but, right.
I did get the opportunity to do, a U style event, like, you know, Kiyoshi Tamura, like,
yeah, yeah.
So like when he was done with Rings or whatever, like, I think he started to float around maybe in Pride around that time, or but he started doing these UWF style shows, and he had one called U style. He had like, maybe did like 10 or something. And I was a big fan of his from watching him in Rings. So I think I asked somebody in the office, and they reached out to them because they had like a connection. And then they got me booked on a U style event. So it was really cool. It was at Corrigan, and I did like a 15 minute draw with Manabu Hara. And it was like a really good match, you know? So, tomorrow, the next time I was like, oh, I would like to do it again. And then there was like a short time where tomorrow said he would go against me, wow. in the main event. So I was like, whoa, this is going to be, you know, cause this is like sick, you know,
yeah,
this is
crazy. Yeah, yeah.
And then something happened. And then, oh, I think the guy that was in our office, like, I think it was Uwai, and he like left New Japan or something, like started some other company, and like Shibata went with them. So like, that was the end of that.
Wow.
So, but oh, yeah, man. that would have been like,
wow.
Sick.
Yeah.
Sick. Yeah.
Let's, you know, I was listening to you talk with Brian on Observer Live last week, and you guys didn't get to cover the music. You didn't get to talk about Sneaky Style a lot. I want to do that here. Give you a chance for the listeners here at the Observer to get to know a little about the album. You know, you did the Roppongi Vice theme. People know you from there. But what was like the impetus for finally deciding that, you know, whether it's going back a couple of years or just recently, to, you know, I want to do an album, and I really want to put my creativity outside of the ring into something tangible and do this album and start writing music. What led you to finally, you know, go ahead with the album?
Because I had done like two mixtapes like before, like based around the Roppongi Vice like theme, and based around like the Roppongi Vice, because as a whole, like me and Trent, like Trent just basically like is a hype man on it. You know, I didn't really like feel like I had put all my effort into it. It was just kind of like, let me just do it, it'll be like fun. And it was fun, and you know, but like I was like, but this time I was like, why don't I try to really try like hard, you know, and like try to like work really hard on the beats, and, you know, maybe work with some other people and get like, you know, some friends, you know, that will, you know, make guest appearances on it, and just like really like go for it, you know, like I wonder what I could do. So I just kind of like, I toyed around with it for like a bit, like for like a year, but I didn't really get serious about it, you know? Mm. And then finally I was just like, I woke up one day and I was like, if I say that I'm going to drop this on a certain day, it'll force me to have to like actually get it done and like do it, you know? But then I have to be like all in, you know?
Yeah.
So then I just did that to myself. And then I was like, okay, now now you got to work really hard to make this thing work, you know?
Yeah.
So then, you know, I reached out to like a lot of people that I knew, as a guy named John Sparks, shout out to John, who helped me for like, I think he did like 6 or 7 songs. He like engineered them, and he's like a badass engineer. Like he's done like French Montana.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, he's done a bunch of big art, like rap artists and stuff. So he kind of helped me out too. And he, you know, cause he's been saying, you know, send me stuff. I just didn't have anything good to send him, you know? And I really like, I didn't want to, you know, like just give him anything, you know? So like,
now
I
was were you making beats as well as writing lyrics?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been making beats since like 2000, like 7 or 8 when I was in Mexico. Yeah. Okay. So I was in Mexico and I wasn't working. Like I was working for AAA, but then it's like when, all the drug mafia stuff started happening with all the narcos, like basically AAA just started running like one show a week. So we went from like 3, 4, 5 shows, 6 shows a week to just one, and then sometimes none. So like I wasn't doing anything. So I was just going nuts in my apartment, like, what the hell am I doing? You know, like I should be like wrestling, you know? So I got a laptop and I was just like, oh, let me see this, like one of these beat programs. And I started playing with that. So then, I started like writing, music there and then recording it. And then I got like Mark Jindrak involved, Mark Corleone, and he started like rapping on him. So like, that's like, we made like a little duo, you know? And like, we busta wrote like 100 songs and like 3 or 4 months, you know, like just like playing around, and we were both off, and you know, we still had, you know, we were still getting paid and stuff, something. So like we didn't know what to do. So we would just do that. And then, that was just a really good experience. It gave me a lot of experience. We went to like a studio, we started like messing around there, and, it just gave me some like confidence and experience. And then, so I never really stopped. And then I got the opportunity to make, you know, like the Roppongi Vice theme. I made the Forever Hooligans theme. So it progressively just kind of like the skill level got a little better, a little better. Not saying like I'm the shit or anything, but like.
You do something just like in wrestling, you do it every day. You do.
Right.
Regardless of what form is, it's physical, mental, however, you're going to get better at something. It's just getting those reps in. And
exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I just. So then by the time, you know, like I knew I wanted to release the Roppongi 3K song, like on Spotify and stuff. So that was also like another thing. I was like, if I do it and I do a collection of songs behind it, I think people will really, you know, dig it and then just go real hard, you know, just try to like make something that I would be proud of and that like I wouldn't be embarrassed of, and like people would be like, oh, I heard your, you know, I heard your album, I heard your music. It was like, oh, that was cool. You know, that's all I wanted, you know? And then
and
also
it's been like, happening.
Yeah. It's really cool to me when fans reach out and they say, oh, on our way to the show, we listened to your whole Roppongi Vice mixtape, like just to get us like pumped for the show. Like, I love that. Like, that's so cool because I could see myself doing that, you know?
Yeah.
As a fan, like getting ready for a wrestling show and be like, oh, well, let's bump, you know, whatever, you know, to get ready.
listen, man. Hey, any workers listening to this, we all listen to, at some point or another, have listened to wrestling themes, whether it's while we're working out.
Remember like the old WWF ones? I feel like it was like called the Jacked series or something.
Oh, you had the Jacked ones, but then you had like the cassette. I would have the cassette ones in, like during the Attitude Era or before.
Yeah,
and exactly. It'd be like you'd envision yourself as fucking, I don't know, Ahmed Johnson coming. Yeah, like.
Oh, yeah. I actually did that with Ahmed Johnson and his music. Yeah,
1,000%.
I used to like tie some armbands around my arms and like you made those like red armbands.
Yeah.
I thought the Pearl River Plunge was like the dopest move of all time.
I remember I loved him as a kid, and when I was a teenager, and I was like, why aren't they pushing this guy? Why? Why? And then when you find out, when you get into the business, like, well, he hurt everybody.
Oh yeah. He wasn't that great, but like, he was huge, you know? And like, especially I thought he was awesome.
Oh, I did too. Yeah. anyone that says they didn't like the SIDS and the Warriors and the Lugers at the time when they were younger. Come on, man. Don't. We can like the Dean Malenkos and those guys as well. But it all started with, you know, seeing the Warrior or Hogan or something.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Absolutely. That was that was such a huge match for me. I mean, we're about the same age, I'm guessing. So it's
Yeah.
That was, that was a quite the night when that went down.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Turned me, you know, I was all for Warrior. All for Warrior.
Same.
I had
Same.
Enough of Hogan at that point.
And, me too.
And
me
I was
too.
Like, it's
and I
not...
thought, and I was starting to get older, so I started to think that he was hokey, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. You knew you figured bit. You even then at, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old, whatever, you figured out, okay, he's gonna, this is where he starts to Hulk up, and this, you figured the formula, and then God, I was not expecting the Warrior to win. And
yeah,
it was awesome. As we start to wrap things up here, who are like your, you know, so many, I'm a big hip hop guy, going back to like Yo MTV Raps and really like slept upon guys are some of my favorite guys, like Large Professor, that both, you know, were behind the, you know, producing and then rhyming as well. You know, I always like Gangstar, the DJ Premier beats and whatnot. Who are your like main influences that you kind of to this day said, well, I kind of want to emulate so and so when it comes to writing or producing, or, you know, if I could add a little of this guy's touch or a little of this guy's flair, who are those people for you growing up and even to this day?
Probably, I mean, like growing up at a young age, it was probably like Dre and Snoop, you know, at a really young age. They made, obviously, because that was like, you know, growing up on the West Coast, you know, they were influential. I mean, they were the West Coast, you know, so so a lot of stuff probably comes through like in some kind of way. But even though like I've grown and kind of grown out of that, that like I'll still go back to listen to like the Doggy Style album.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
You know, or the original Chronic, you know, just because it's like, just so I kind of, or even like Warren G. And then, but I would have to say like overall, the biggest two influences musically is the Beatles and Kanye West. And just because like, I think as I started to make and produce beats and stuff, it was Kanye who was like, he was like, doing everything. And he was doing it so well, and you know, and like, and just, you know, like, you know, and this was pre like Kanye like crazy as fuck, but like
this was talking college dropout, late registration, but even before, when he was producing
graduation,
for Jay-Z,
Graduation is one of my favorite albums. I love Graduation, and I love and I love, I think the, still his greatest album is Dark Twisted Fantasy. I think that one's fucking just an insane album. And I still listen to that like a ton.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of, you know, I think Donald Glover is like, he's just phenomenal all
great.
Around. Childish
he's
Gambino.
Great.
And it was like,
he's so good.
Kanye West was kind of like the precursor to him, where it was, you know, he's just do everything and took chances and didn't care about mainstream popularity, getting top 40, you know, play and whatnot.
And you know what I think was also a big influence was that, you know, it was like, he was like one of the first guys to not have to be a gangster or do gangster rap to like be dope, you know, and like, and really make like awesome music. So I think that was a big deal too, you know, to me. So I don't know. I could see just like he was a super creative guy, and he was just like doing all kinds of stuff, you know, inside and outside of music, and just not being afraid to do that. Cause I think I was feeling too, like I could understand him, like, you know, at that time he wanted to do fashion, and everybody was like, you know, you can't design shoes, you can't design, you know, and it's like, oh, well, you're a wrestler, you can't do music, you can't, it's like, you can't do any other things. You can only do this, you know, or like people laugh like, what the, like, you made me like, you made a song, like, why, you know, like, why not? Like,
yeah,
it's something that interests me, why not,
you know? I mean, God, I remember listening to, like, you know, before there was hip-hop channels, there was top 40 radio, and you were like always hoping, like late at night or at like 10 o'clock, you'd get a DJ on there that would, you know, spin the songs continuously, you know, kind of loop them together like DJs do now on the weekends. But it was like you'd hope for certain hip hop songs to come along, and every once in a while, you know, you would have that in the late 80s, early 90s. But yeah, it wasn't until like the early 90s, man, you know, the Chronic was, you know, people, if you were alive back then, remember, you know, for people listening, you know, Dr. Dre was, you know, Eazy-E and Ice Cube were the big guys coming out of NWA. And Dr. Dre was just before the Chronic. He was, you know, he wasn't on the level that they were at. But then, you know, once the Chronic hit, I mean, that was constantly on MTV. It was constantly everywhere. On the radio. It was everywhere. And it's funny you brought him and Snoop up, because I was just yesterday on Sirius, Deep Cover came on. And I tell my girlfriend, I was like, this is the first song that this is Snoop's first ever song where people got to know him, because it was from the movie Deep Cover. It was from the soundtrack. And that was before Doggy Style. That was before the Chronic. And it was that didn't blow up like G Thing did. And then, you know,
that got me hooked was G Thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I was too young for NWA, right? I mean, that was just too extreme, too young. So, like, you know, this is like maybe sixth grade or fifth grade or something. So, like, I'm just, you know, starting to, you know, my life is starting to change once you get to middle school, right? So, So, like, and then G Thing comes out, and, you know, I heard it. And then that with like the visuals, like you were talking about, like, you know, they weren't just playing like G Thing on like just Yo MTV Raps. I mean, they was like in the consistent loop that they would play, you know, every hour, you know? So it was like, I'm watching MTV and I'm just going like, what is this? You know, this is crazy. Like, this looks like a fun party. I want to be a part of this. Like, what, you know, like as a young man, you know, like there's girls everywhere. I'm like, what is, I want to, you know, like, what is this rap music? I want to be a rapper. Basically.
I love, even to this day, like, I'll hear an old funk song or an old blues song, and I'll recognize the
sample,
the beat, and I'm like, oh my god, that was from holy shit, that's where.
Oh, I do that all the time, especially like with like I'm like, they sampled that. Oh shit, okay, this is the song. Oh, this is cool, you know. Now, you know, they never really looked for them before.
No.
But now they pop up in like just all kinds of cool music. You're just like, whoa.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. You got this the New Japan US tour is coming up. And you got some new markets. You got Tampa, Miami and Atlanta are also on the schedule. You haven't been to either of those yet, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's basically our first time in Florida. Yeah, we've never done Tampa. We haven't done Miami. Raleigh, Durham will be a first one. We did Nashville last year, which was awesome. Hmm. And then I'm missing one more. What am I missing? Miami, Atlanta, Tampa, Raleigh. Yeah, Nashville. That's it. Yeah, five cities. So.
So this is exciting, because these are, I mean, big markets here, man. Toronto, Miami, Atlanta, in addition to Durham and Nashville. Tell the listeners here about this upcoming tour and why they should go out and see it. I know why. It's the best wrestling on the planet, but tell us about the tour coming up.
I mean, best wrestling on the planet. We're bringing it, like, you know, we're bringing it live. And, you know, obviously we got split crews. You know, we have a crew in Japan that's doing a full tour. But, you know, but we didn't skimp out on you. You know, we're bringing Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kota Ibushi. I mean, just those names alone are worth, you know, driving out and coming out from wherever you're living. If you're in the Southeast, you got no excuses to miss this one. You know, G.O.D. will be there. Juice Robinson. David Finley, there's even an IWGP tag title match. I mean, it's going to be crazy. So, I'm excited to be a part of it. I'm excited to take, you know, our product to these towns and just even for like, those new fans who have heard of New Japan, but, you know, or maybe they like saw them on, you know, saw something on Access TV, or it's just like, I keep hearing about this Wrestle Kingdom thing, come out, you know, show up, hang out with us. I mean, it's going to be a really good time, and I bet you're going to be hooked from, you know, that second on. I mean, that's basically how it goes.
Yeah, and there's going to be some familiar names there. The Rock and Roll Express will be back.
Yeah.
And I believe you got a you've got a tag match against them, which will be very cool.
And, so cool.
You know, some up and coming talent like Alex Zane, who I know from up here in the Northeast, just can do freakishly insane things. And it's going to be a wonderful mix. And I mean,
yeah, we got our Young Lions, our LA Dojo Young Lions. Ren Narita is going to be there. TJP, Cole Cabana, Toriano. I mean, it's super stacked. The cards are stacked.
Yeah. And Rocky, where can listeners and readers here at The Observer find you on Twitter, find you on social media? And because you're constantly promoting anything New Japan, which is awesome. And where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at AzukaRock, AzukaRock. And you can also find me on IG at the same name, at AzukaRock, AzukaRock. For more information about the upcoming tour, hit up NJPW1972.com. And then you can always watch all the great New Japan action at NJPWWorld.com. That's our streaming service. It's going strong. It's got a hell of a library. I mean, just for the Wrestle Kingdoms and Dominion alone, for what you pay, it's like $8 or $9 US a month. Yeah. I mean, it's well worth it.
Welcome to the Boston Garden, the home of the Celtics, where today the Boston Celtics play host to the San Diego Clippers, the first meeting of the year between these two clubs. The Celtics trailing the Philadelphia 76ers by a half game in the Atlantic Division. And the San Diego Clippers coming in here one game under the 500 mark.
In my former days, I was a king. But now I look forward to the future. As I send you crying down that road of Nakasuzo.
Eye patch wearing, nefariously daring, notorious, much more than glorious. Forever clotheslining like a minibus, with a surplus of energy for all my enemies. Black Tiger Soul, Roppongi Hero, Shibakuzo, Nakasuzo Road. Just when you thought it was a wrap, yo, Sugar is back with a new rapper back. Back full of beats and a RPG cat. Strapping on the iPad, serving up the next batch for a little more scratch. Rocky Romero merch.com, Black Tiger, so bomb, a jacket. Yeah, I love this new racket. Going solo like the cups, flip off Trent for good luck. That's heavyweight Trent, taking heavyweight bumps. Yeah, Black Tiger, so Roppongi Hero, Shibakuzo, Nakasuzo Road. I guess we'll see what happens to me. I'll keep repping the streets of Roppongi like an OG. Keep writing up rhymes, listening to Sublime. 40 ounces of strong Z on my mind. 405 forever close lines to win the junior title is my design. Chaos loyal, yeah, the world is mine. Maybe Trent, Chuck, and I will get along better this time.
Nope, probably not. The Rocky texted me and he said, hey man, I'm making a new entrance song for myself because I'm that kind of guy. I need you to hype me. I said, okay, I don't want it, but I'll do it anyway. Rocky Romero, one of the strongest men I know, 4 feet tall, eye patch. So he's got like curly Bart Simpson kind of hair. He's got Bart Simpson's haircut. But man, they can hit a lot of clotheslines when the guy's in the corner. Here he is.
Black Tiger Soul. Black Tiger Soul. Black Tiger Soul. Roppongi Hero. Black Tiger Soul. Roppongi Hero. Shibakuzo. Nakasuzo Road.
Le casse-zo, 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 le casse-zo